Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Back to LeBron, takes his time. LeBron gets the angle, sends it, and hits it. LeBron turns the corner, shaking the leg. LeBron changed gears. Kevin Love wide open three. The bottom. Curry spin around and Uncle Drew goes to work. Curry called for it against Teague. Gets to the glass. It's goes from left hand. And inside, two more for Curry. Shumpert to the corner. Ah, Shumpert. Curry Irving. Against T. Creates space and hit a tough three. LeBron James steps into the three. Kevin Love! Curry lost it! Oh! Rudy Irving dusts the eye. LeBron James stays in front. George equals the test. CJ Miles a step back, tough shot. Turner hits his second shot here tonight. Stevenson off the bounce, and he hit it. Teague backs out for three and hits it. LeBron now defending James. Crossover move, got inside, gave it up. Good dunking Turner. Paul George against LeBron James. George turned the corner, but fires it up and hits an impossible shot. George for three. Kyrie feeling it, sends it. Take a 2-0 lead.
We're right there of what we know we can become. And we'll figure it out. Like I told you, I'd much rather have an 18-point lead than not have a lead at all. We make plays down the stretch to win a ball game and in the postseason. That's all you can ask for. But we're right there on turning the switch on what we really can become. Our mindset is what we can do to help each other to be successful out on the floor. We have a game plan from our coaching staff, and we just try to execute that. We can't worry about what the opponent is feeling or if they feel like they lost composure. It's not our mindset. Our mindset is what can we do this defensive possession to get a stop, offensively what we can do to execute to get a bucket.
I think just breaking down the film after Sunday's game, just knowing that between Tristan and myself, Channing, Bron, whoever was low on some of those pin downs and rotations, we just had to be there early. And just want to help my teammates out, sacrifice my body. I felt like I did that tonight.
Man, if we had the answers, we'd probably be up in the series right now. I'm trying to figure it out. We're trying to figure it out. They're killing us on it. Whatever it is, whatever we got to do, we got to try to figure it out at home. But they're definitely killing us on a 1-3 pick and roll. As you guys writing us off that this game was going to be easy for the Cavs, we take away some of these easy baskets we're giving up. These games might be a little different.
Salazar in his third start this year. Now the 3-2. Struck him out with a changeup. 95 at the knees. Runner goes, swing and a miss. He struck him out. Danny Salazar finishes with three strikeouts here in the sixth inning, giving him seven on the night.
The number it has grown to. There's a big two-out knock.
Edwin Encarnacion comes through with his first hit as an Indian with runners in scoring position, and it gives the Indians a 2-1 lead in the third. Oh, that is smoked. Deep right center field, and it is gone for Michael Brantley. His second home run of the year, making a 3-1 Cleveland lead. He's driven in two of the three runs tonight for the Tribe. Hit in the air, center field, Lonnie Chisenhall makes the catch, and the Indians survive. The Twins leave them loaded, and Cleveland takes the series opener.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the extravaganza right here on The Ticket. Hope you're having an outstanding day. Thanks so much for being with us. We are Toledo's sports leader. And wow, nice healthy montage there put together by Mr. Cushland producing the show today. Mr. Gargano along with him. How about it? Cavaliers, are they as close as LeBron thinks that they are to being where they need to be? I got to tell you, I listened to it, I watched it, but I don't buy it. I'm not buying what he's selling right now, to be 100% honest with you. It was, once again, a dominating performance for a good portion of the game, only to let it get whittled away to a two-possession game near the end of the game. Simply inexcusable, and I don't think they're as close as a lot of people, including LeBron James, might. You heard a little bit from Kevin Love there as well. Talking about his big game. How about 89 points out of the big three in game two between the Cavaliers and the Indiana Pacers? That was big, big, big. 37 for Kyrie Irving, who was just on fire. 27 on extraordinarily efficient shooting from Kevin Love. 25 from LeBron James, who had a great all-around game, save for the turnovers, especially most of them in the first half. But boy, down the stretch, once again, they went into a lull. They couldn't quite keep their offense in rhythm. They started playing that stanky leg, stand around and watch everybody else go one-on-one offense, and their defense gave up big shots, once again. Not just to Paul George, but to a number of Indiana Pacers. So to me, it's a 2-0 series lead. It might look like it's all good, but it is not all good in that hood as far as I am concerned. A little bit of baseball there at the end as well. The Indians, fresh off of having 2 out of 3 taken from them by the Tigers, at least go and get a Game 1 win in the first of, Game 1 win. I'll just stop there. I won't be redundant about it. In the series against the Minnesota Twins up in the Twin City. So that's where we are. As far as the montage, a lot of very good stuff there. We didn't even hear from Memphis coach David Fizdale in the montage, but we will. In fact, I got a couple of head coaches. I'm going to play audio cuts of for you so we can kind of dissect what's going on in the NBA playoffs for very different reasons, but that is something we'll get into. Want you to be a part of the program at your leisure. 866-240-1065. We'll get you here. 866-240-1065. You can also hit us up on Twitter. That's Sports Radio 106.5, if you are so inclined, or Facebook, which is 106.5, The Ticket. We'll find a way to get you up and on the radio, your thoughts anyway, up and on the radio as we go. All right, I want to play this again, and I want your thoughts, too. If you're a Cavaliers fan living in Northwest Ohio or listening anywhere, really, in Ohio or around the world through our free mobile app, which, of course, is Sports Radio 106.5. You can get that on the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. Download that app and listen to us wherever you go, no matter what part of the state or out or the country you're in. But if you're a Cavs fan particularly, but even if you're not, if you're a Pistons fan, but you have nothing to root for now because they're not in the playoffs and you have thoughts on this, please hit us up on this. You watch Game 2. Are the Cavaliers, Frank Argano and Jim Kushlin as well can comment on this. You watched Game 2. You saw the Cavaliers pull out to a big 19-point lead at its zenith. It was a terrific effort. Great balance of inside drives and scoring and outside shooting. You had Indiana's defense. You talk about the Cavaliers' defense. Indiana's defense. I mean, they're spinning in circles. They didn't know where to go on switches when they were picking rolls. I mean, they just got lost. And or more importantly, the Cavaliers' offensive players got lost, and the Pacers did not know where to find them. Open three looks. It was a three-point barrage in the first half. A little bit more of that in the second half, too, but really going to the basket. Cavaliers did whatever they wanted in building that 19-point lead. But then in the fourth quarter, when you let a 19-point lead get whittled down to 4, I'm sorry, you are not at a place where you can say we're right there and we're about to be flipping that switch into being in championship mode. I'm sorry, you're not. There's a long way to go. That's my opinion. No. I want to see what everybody else says. Hold on, I want to play it again before you get into that, Jim. I want to play again what LeBron James said after the game about how close he thinks they really are now after taking the 2-0 lead over the Indiana Pacers.
We're right there what we know we can become, and we'll figure it out. Like I told you, I'd much rather have an 18-point lead than not have a lead at all. We make plays down the stretch to win a ball game, and in the postseason, that's all you can ask for. But we're right there on turning the switch on what we really can become. Our mindset is what we can do to help each other to be successful out on the floor. We have a game plan from our coaching staff, and we just try to execute that. We can't worry about what the opponent is feeling or if they feel like they lost composure. It's not our mindset. Our mindset is what can we do this defensive possession to get a stop, offensively what we can do to execute to get a bucket.
Yeah, I'm not feeling it, LeBron. I'm not feeling that you are right there.
We're right there.
No, you're not. I don't think you're able to flip the switch from where you are.
What we can do to help each other.
I missed it. One more time. Let's hit him.
On turning the switch on what we really can become. Our mindset is what we can do to help each other to be successful.
Still missed part of it. One more time.
That's all you can ask for, but we're right there.
There it is.
On turning the switch on what we really can
become. There it is.
We're right there. On turning the switch on what we really can become. We're right there on turning the switch on what we really can become.
I'm not seeing it. I don't think they're right there. I don't think there's a switch they can just turn on to see what they can become. I don't see it. I don't have a whole lot more reason to be excited and enthused about their chances of winning an NBA championship after Game 2 in the postseason than I did after they blew a big lead and almost coughed it up on a C.J. Miles jumper in game number 1. Go ahead, Jim.
You know, and that's the interesting part. And the fourth quarter, despite the fact the Cavs won the game and they're up 2-0, The fourth quarter is what's sitting poorly with all of us today. I mean, you have a team that were up 19. Everything on both sides of the ball was pretty efficient. I mean, you were talking earlier about the Pacers and not know where Cavs guys are, or Cavs
they're lost.
Not only that, they were simply exploiting matchups, like when Kevin Love went completely off in that third quarter, and in the post, who was his main opposition? Well, Lance Stephenson. He got completely under his skin and kept drawing fouls, and this time sank all their free throws, unlike the game before. And all that's good, and I'm thinking at the end of the third quarter watching this, Bob, it's like, okay, I'm still not ready to say, yeah, you fully flipped the switch, but this is what I expected to see out of you. And then the fourth quarter happens. They get a little lax on defense. Once again, offensive possession. This is where I'm actually going to criticize something offensively for the Cavs, because throughout most of this uneasy stretch that they had down the stretch in the season where we commented legitimately about their defense, the offense for the most part was fine. But that happens in games like yesterday. You take your foot off that gas. You don't apply the same types of defensive pressures that they did earlier in the game. And offensively, the thing that annoys me the most, you waste the whole shot clock on iso ball. I absolutely
think about how they built the lead. They built the lead on incredible ball movement. I mean, they just flick it around from one place to another until they find the open shooter or the open cutter, and that's how they built that lead. Mm-hmm. They were red hot from the outside. Love was hitting. Channing Frye was hitting. Kyrie was hitting. JR was hitting before he went out of that hamstring. Everybody was drilling outside shots, and that, of course, pulls people out and enables you to get cuts to the basket. So all of that great ball movement that built the lead disappears, and it's dribble, 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 dribble. That infamous stanky leg offense that some people like to call it. I don't know. It's puzzling to me why you say take the foot off the gas, and I just don't know why you stop moving the ball around as much as you were.
Yeah, that that's the part of it. It's the ISO part that annoys me. I mean, okay, if you want to use the whole shot clock because, you know, you're up by a lot, it's time to, you know, make those seconds tick off the clock. I get that. I'm not criticizing that, but why the sudden stop a ball move? Why is it that every time, and this has gone on for a couple years now, of course, this isn't new, every time in those situations, the ball movement stops, and it's either Kyrie or LeBron taking basically the entire shot clock and hoisting up a, most of the time, contested three.
Right.
I that's terrible, dumb offense. That's just bad. And that's almost as bad as the taking the foot off the gas on the defensive side. You put those two together, and that's how 19-point leads become 4-point leads late in the game.
That's exactly correct. And so the question I have now, and I want fans to answer at 866-240-1065, do you think LeBron James really believes it when he says,
"We're right there on turning the switch on what we really can become"? Our mindset is what we can do to help each other to be successful out on the floor. We have a game plan from our coaching staff, and we just try to execute that.
Do you believe him when he says that we're right there to switching that, flipping that switch to what we can become, or is it wishful thinking?
I think he believes
it, or is he trying to talk himself into believing that?
I think he does believe it, but I'm not so sure. And the analogy I've been thinking of, and he even mentioned it, LeBron did in those clips you just played, that the flicking the switch came up again. You know, do we have the analogy wrong? Because what I saw yesterday was not a normal light switch. What I saw was one of those dimmer switches, okay? They shot it up at the beginning of the game, and they were solid, I thought, on both sides of the ball through about three quarters. And then, instead of just flicking it off like a regular light switch, it's like the dimmer switch. Oh, let's just take it down a few notches.
That's not a bad analogy, actually. That's not a bad analogy.
We're right there on turning the switch on what we really can become.
We're right there on turning the switch on what we really can become. Let me tell you what I saw instead. I'm not really thinking about what, quote, we really can become. Let me tell you what I saw is I saw what you are. It's not what you can become, it's what you are. I think this is just, at the end of it all, we're going to have to acknowledge, we're going to have to admit that this is who the Cavaliers are. Where's Denny Green? God rest his soul when you need him. The Cavaliers are who we thought they were. Or maybe, in this case, because so many people are freaked out by it, maybe they're not who we thought they were. Maybe we thought they were going to be a lot better than what they are, but they're just not. But to me, this is what the Cavaliers really are. They're a team that is built around offense. Think about it. LeBron James' greatest attribute, of course, is his ability to play the offensive end, to be a playmaker, to be a scorer, to be a shooter, to be a distributor. Yes, he can play defense, and he has been an all-defensive player in his career. He's still not, in my estimation, on the level of a Kawhi Leonard, I don't know why I can't speak today, a Kawhi Leonard or some other guys. But he has been a great defensive player, but he's primarily an offensive player. He takes a lot of defensive possessions off. Kyrie Irving, clearly a tremendous offensive talent. Kevin Love, a tremendous offensive player. J.R. Smith, they don't call him J.R. Lockdown, they call him J.R. Swish because he's a shooter. Tristan Thompson, you know, is just that workhorse. He'll do whatever he has to do to get a board, offensively or defensively. He might be an exception to this conversation. Kyle Korver, shooter, led the NBA now four times in three-point percentage. He is not a defensive player. He's, I don't want to just say he's a flat-out liability, I mean, but defensively, he's not going to lock too many guys down. You look at the bench, you know, Richard Jefferson can give you what he can give you. He's probably a little more fundamentally sound on defense than some of the other guys. Channing Frye, I don't know. Maybe it just depends on the day. But by and large, the Cavaliers' main guys in the rotation are offensive forces. And their belief is, we can outscore you. We have more firepower than you. And guess what? In the Eastern Conference, that very well may be true. They may be right. We can just outscore the Indiana Pacers. We can probably outscore the Boston Celtics if we face them. We can probably just outscore even John Wall and Bradley Beal and the Wizards, although that will be a tougher task because they can also fill it up. They've got two great scorers. See, the Cavaliers have an advantage. I mentioned the 89 points that they got from the big three. 37, 30, 27, and 25. The 89 points they get from the big three, nobody else has a three. Boston has a one. They got a big one. They got Isaiah Thomas, who's a 30-point-a-night scorer for, you know, on most nights. You know, Washington has a one and a 1B, a little bit in Beal. Of course, John Wall and Beal. You know, the Raptors, they have a one and kind of a 1B. DeMar DeRozan can certainly fill it up. He can score and outscore some folks. Kyle Lowry, not as much. And I'll stop there. And, you know, Milwaukee has Antetokounmpo, and that's about it. You know, maybe next year they'll be a little bit better when Jabari Parker is back and fully healthy. But in other words, if it just comes down to can we outscore everybody that we play in the East without having to be a good defensive team, can we make it to the finals? The answer is yes. Even though I have said, and I don't want to back down from this, I have said that for my money, if I had to put money on a Vegas bet, I would not bet that they will come out of the East because of that defense. I said that during that terrible finish to the season, not for the full 23-23 they finished the season, but you know, the last month or so, when it just became clear they're not going to be flipping any switches, they're not going to be coming up with any solutions to their terrible defensive traits. I just kind of said, I don't have confidence they're coming out of the East. And if I had to put money on it, I don't think they will. Now, based on the fact that what I just said is true, they have three scorers, plus J.R. Smith when he gets hot, plus Kyle Korver when he gets hot. I mean, now you got multiple scorers, more than even the big three. And most of the other teams just don't have that kind of firepower. Maybe they will still come out of the East. But being that, and the whole point of this little montage, or not montage, just monologue, is that they are what they are. They're an offensively built team. David Griffin put together a lot of great scorers, and Ty Lue likes to coach those scorers. He did not put a lot of defenders on this roster. Be that as it may, if they do get out of the East, I feel like they're going to get rolled. Let me say that again. Rolled. If they get to the NBA Finals playing this style of basketball against the Warriors. Because guess what? The Warriors have everything the Cavs do. Multiple scorers. They have their own big three of guys who can fill it up in Durant, Curry, and Klay Thompson. And not to mention an all-NBA defensive player, and maybe the defensive player of the year in Draymond Green, who can also score when he has to. You go rolling up against that offensive juggernaut and say, we're just going to outscore you, we don't have to defend you, you're going to get yourselves in a whole heap of trouble. So to that end, and for those reasons, I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with LeBron James. what he says.
We're right there of what we know we can become.
No, no, LeBron. I want you to be, but you're really not.
We're right there on turning the switch on what we really can become.
No, no. I want it to be the case, but I just really do not think it is.
We're right there of what we know we can become. We're right there on turning the switch on what we really can become.
I don't care how many times you say it in the same answer. Doesn't make it any more true. What you can become is an underdog in a very, very big way in the NBA Finals if you are fortunate enough to get there, because the Warriors are going to be favored by a lot. Until you can find a way to run up a 19-point lead on a bunch of scrubs from Indiana and hold it and win the game by 15, and I shouldn't be that rude. That's wrong to call them scrubs. Paul George is a nice player, but they got problems over there. Oh, my, do they got problems in Indiana. Paul George calling out C.J. Miles for taking the last shot in game one, now calling out Lance Stephenson, now calling out Miles Turner. He is taking it to some of his underlings, if you will, on the totem pole of power in Indiana's lineup, and that is not going to go well for anybody.
And that's against the backdrop, too, in Indiana, where Paul George may already have one foot out the door.
Exactly. And this may be what he's trying to do. You know, this might be just the, hey, I want to make sure that I've got my foot out the door. I want to make sure they move me.
All right.
You know, and if I've got to be the villain here, if I got to be the bad guy, if I got to say some bad things about other guys, then that's what I'm going to do. But I want to get to L.A. I want to do this or that or the other thing. I just don't know. But they got some problems over there. And if they've got problems over there in Indiana like that, and the Cavaliers are still trying to give fourth quarter leads away to that team, then the Cavaliers are not LeBron.
We're right there.
No.
We're right there.
Stop it. You're just lying.
We're right there.
Don't argue with me, King James. I know this.
We're right there.
No, you are not right there.
We're right there.
Stop it.
And that's why, you know, I said, Bob,
that... I argue with this guy, but it's true.
And that's why I said, even though I think LeBron in that clip we're now playing over and over again, I think he believes that, but I don't. I mean, I don't right now. You can't be giving up these types of fourth quarter leads, even if you hang on to win. Let's put it this way. The third quarter of that game was coming to an end last night, and I'm thinking, okay, if the Cavs hold on to this, they'll be up 2-0. And remember last week when we were previewing this series, I said, well, for me, you went five, Cavs in five. I said either Cavs in six or Cavs a sweep, and there'd be two different ways it would go six. Well, obviously one of them's gone. If it's going six, it's kind of following that Toronto Raptors East Finals from a year ago.
Yeah.
So expect one or two to be dropped, you know, in Indiana, and that's the problem. And the Cavs postgame guys on Fox Sports Ohio were talking about this, and one of them said, look, I've given them only a B- for today, and I can't go any higher than that because you can't keep giving up gigantic leads of, in this case, 19, and it's down to four, because all that does is give a team like the Pacers, who at points in that third quarter, look at the expressions on Lance Stephenson's face. They were completely rattled. You could, you know, put the boot on the neck right there, but they didn't do it. So all that does for a team now going back to their building really backs up against the wall, because you never want to go down 0-3. We know that story.
That's right.
That's going to give them confidence that they could actually finish off one of these later game comebacks when they have their crowd behind them. So that's why right now I wanted to, that third quarter came to an end, I'm thinking, okay, if this hangs for another quarter, I might have to think they might go to that sweep. Now I'm still confident it'll be six, because I can easily see the Cavs dropping these next two, and we're back here in Cleveland in a week.
I can't because of what I said before about this is who they are. From a straight talent standpoint and a straight offensive ability standpoint, they can roll the Pacers two more times. And even if
Agreed.
They lose one, which is why I said five, they'll come back and they'll roll them in games four and five. You know, if they lose
right.
game three, they'll win games four and five and win them pretty, you know, pretty easily from an offensive standpoint.
Exactly. Maybe that's how it plays out. But
yeah.
what I've seen out of two games, good that the Cavs are up 2-0. But they're totally dropping at least one of these in Indiana. Unless this stuff gets fixed now.
And we're going to talk. We're going to talk, by the way, about this from the Indiana perspective. Tom Lewis, who writes for IndyCornrow.com. That's an SB Nation site. No, it's not about hair, by the way. It's Indiana, for crying out loud. Yes, they got cornfields. Corn. I'd love that, by the way. We're going to talk to Tom Lewis from the Indiana perspective coming up here in just a couple. But right now I want to talk to you about FanDuel Fantasy Sports. Have you started playing fantasy golf yet? I don't know what you're waiting for. I told you about this before the Masters, and it goes on, of course, each and every week that there is a PGA Tour. So get your lineup in before tee off on Thursday morning at the start of the next event, and you can start watching your team. And winning cash prizes. I mean, it's just that simple. There's so many great ways to play fantasy golf on FanDuel.com. There's something for everybody. Contests start at just $1. And, of course, we're still playing fantasy baseball and fantasy basketball here at the Ticket as well. Jim Cushman and Frank Gargano and I. Our lineup this past week, last night, I should say, had Danny Salazar. Looked a little rough early, but, man, he settled in, did he not? 6 innings, just 1 run allowed, 7 hits, 7 strikeouts. Like to have the Indians rotation as part of our fantasy lineup whenever possible, and he paid off for us. Mike Trout also was one of our picks. Of course, he's a little more expensive. You got to pick and choose your spots. He was 2-for-3 with a walk and a stolen base. But, you know, it's just so much fun deciding on the matchups and deciding on which individuals you want to go, who's hot, who's cold, who's got trends against various starters, etc. But that's what makes watching baseball that much more fun. You can play with us and be part of the over 2.5 million players that are winning cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. New users, if you are one and you've never done this, we're going to make it easy. All right, you get FanDuel's combo 5-pack valued up to $50. That's right, and you get it free. 5 free entries to a combination of the 50-50 beginner contest. Just finish in the top half, and you win cash. To get those 5 free entries valued at up to $50, go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, and type in my name, France, FRANTZ. That's FanDuel.com, promo code France, FRANTZ, void where prohibited. Back talking NBA from the Pacers' perspective, coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
But they are who we thought they were.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, 3:42. Let's welcome to the program, as promised, Tom Lewis. We like to look at things from the other side of the coin from time to time. Tom Lewis writes for a tremendously named SB Nation website, IndyCornRow.com. Love it. Tom Lewis, thanks for joining us this afternoon right here in Toledo on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you on. We appreciate it. I'd like to get the view from the other city. We, of course, here in Toledo, geographically, probably know we're kind of halfway between Cleveland and Detroit, a little closer to Detroit, but we got a ton of fans. So we covered the Cavaliers as they make their playoff run, and you are on the other side of this thing now. So tell me where you feel like your Pacers are, or the Pacers are, after 2 games, 2 big leads that the Cavaliers let get away, or maybe from your perspective, that the Pacers cut into and nearly stole 2 games before inevitably being down 2 games tonight.
Yeah, well, yeah, these first 2 games are almost kind of a microcosm of the Pacers season, where they struggle at times, look horrible at times, and then rally and give you hope at times. But really, you know, you can tell they aren't the best team in the series by a long shot. They don't have much margin for error against the Cavs. And, you know, when the big 3 are going like they were last night for Cleveland, it makes it really tough. You know, there's definitely hope that, you know, they can figure some of these things out defensively. They've been so poor defensively, giving up so many easy shots that you hope they can rally. And they've been really strong at home this year. But, you know, they only have 3 potential games at home. So even if they do play at another level at home and are able to win, you know, finding a way to do that on the road, looks like it's going to be too much to take. And, you know, obviously Cleveland's got this series in hand, and it's going to be a struggle the rest of the way.
Tom, let's talk a little bit about, speaking of struggling, what's going on there within the Pacers' own circle. Paul George has made a point now of, after both games, I don't know if it's too strong to say throwing one of his teammates under the bus, but being critical. He was critical of C.J. Miles for not giving him the ball back with about 4, 5, 6 seconds left in game 1 and taking the final shot himself. He said, I need to take that shot. And now this time, he goes after a couple of different guys, and I'll play this so that everybody knows what we're talking about.
What do you need from Miles Turner moving forward this series?
We just need him to challenge Tristan. He'll keep him off the boards. He's got to make himself available down low in the post. He's got to know at this point we need him to take it to the next level. You know, we'll continue to work with him. I've been in his ear all the way up until this point. You know, that next step and growth for him. But in this league, you kind of got to find it. You know, he's still young. He's still learning. So it's a good thing. But we're going to work with him.
So we need more out of Miles Turner. We need him to stop Tristan. We need him to make himself available and score more. We need him to take it to another level. And then Lance Stephenson.
He's got to learn to control himself. He's got to learn to just be in the moment. You know, Lance is in our locker room, is looked upon as a leader, one of our leaders. So his body language has to improve just for the team. You know, we all know it. Lance is an emotional guy, and, you know, a lot of it is just his heart and his competitiveness that emotion comes out on. He's just got to, you know, channel that and put it towards making effort plays on the court, doing whatever he needs for us to succeed.
So how is this being received in Pacerland, Tom? Are the fans and the media there kind of behind Paul George and his kind of pointing out the flaws and the problems of his teammates, or are they viewing this another way?
Yeah, I think in general people are, you know, supporting Paul in his comments and actually kind of combating what has become, you know, a national view on this. A lot of national writers are, you know, putting out headlines, taking snippets of the quotes and, you know, making it sound worse than they actually are. If you heard, you know, the interview in context, in both comments, he was asked about each player and commented on it. And another thing about Paul, which, again, national media folks aren't really aware of because the Pacers aren't really covered nationally that much, but he will talk and talk to the media, but he rarely considers the ramifications of what he's saying. And just like he did with CJ Miles, you know, the next day he'll come back and be like, yeah, that was a little harsh. That, you know, we talked about it, it's no big deal. And that's, you know, in a little bit, just the way Paul is, it's kind of normal. But, you know, you're in the playoffs, you got the spotlight on you, national game, there's only two games that everybody's watching and people are seizing on the comments, but around here, it's not that big a deal, especially...
Well, the other thing people are seizing on nationally, Tom, if I may interject, the other thing they're seizing on is they're saying that maybe Paul George is trying to grease the tracks a little bit, if you will, to get himself out of Dodge, that he wants to go back out to the West Coast. Do you think that Paul George wants out of Indiana, especially if they lose this series in a sweep?
I certainly don't think these comments are him trying to do that. Not at all. You know, he and Miles Turner are pretty close. They literally sit next to each other in the locker room. There's a definite big brother, little brother thing going there. So he's kind of saying what he literally is saying to Miles there with those comments, that, you know, he's going to keep pushing them, keep telling them what they need to do. They do need more out of him. And definitely Miles Turner's development, if he's going to stay in Indiana, is going to be a big part of why he stays, because they need talent around. And when you got a guy with his talent on a favorable contract, that's the only way the Pacers are going to be able to put a better team around them. But, I mean, right now this team is what it is. They can't go out and make a trade. They can't, you know, bring in a free agent. So, you know, they're not going to be better until the off season. And, you know, all that stuff about him leaving in 2 years, that'll play out. But right now I don't think he's thinking about anything other than trying to win these games and make the team better right now. I think that people are projecting a little bit too much on, you know, what's going to happen in 2 summers.
Well, I don't know that they're necessarily thinking about 2 summers. I think the ones who are talking about this are saying that he's trying to force a trade. He wants to make it happen sooner than later, that, you know, he's maybe trying to make himself the enemy or the bad guy, if you will, if that's what it takes for Larry Bird to say, you know what, if this guy doesn't want to sit here and support his teammates and be a part of this, then maybe we'll go ahead and dump him. Well, not dump him, obviously, but trade him and try to rebuild without him.
Yeah, and that would happen this summer, right? That would be, you know, are you going to sign an extension? If not, okay, we'll work a trade. But right now, I don't think that's his purpose.
Okay, that's fair enough. Tom Lewis is our guest. He writes about the Pacers for IndyCornrows.com. Jim Cushing, go ahead.
You know, and I'm thinking about these two games, Tom, and, you know, from our Cavs perspective, they're making us pull out our hair because we're seeing the same types of things from that Cavs perspective we saw down the stretch. And even though the Cavs are up 2-0, I got to believe that the two fourth-quarter comebacks, one in Game 1, which the Pacers took the lead, and then, of course, nearly had the win with that last-second shot attempt. And then yesterday it was 19 points early in the fourth quarter, got all the way down to four. Boy, I gotta believe you flip the home arenas and put those in Indianapolis, and those comebacks by the Pacers take it to the next step, which is actually winning the game. Are those the types of finishes, even though the Pacers end up losing both games, that can give them confidence that says, hey, we can come back against these guys and we can take one or both here in our home building? Is that something you think this team is definitely thinking about right now?
I think they're confident that they can win at home, and they've been, honestly, if you look at the numbers, so much better at home. And, you know, offensively, they shoot the ball better, they make plays, the crowd is real strong, and I'm sure they believe that. Watching the games from, you know, my perspective, I guess, I felt like even that game last night, you know, and maybe I'm just biased times, but I still feel like, you know, they have another gear that they haven't even hit. And even when that game got, you know, the 4 or 5, I just felt, you know, obviously they made the great out-of-bounds play and pull away there at the end. And that's kind of what I felt was going to happen the whole time. When they needed to, they were going to make a play and put that thing away. And you know, right now it's kind of, can the Pacers get over that hump on the, at home even and have that lead down the stretch and hang on to it? I know they'll be taking their swings, but they don't want a one basket game at the very end. They're going to have to, you know, put a run on them late and put that thing away. And then maybe that would build confidence, to get another win in game 4.
You know, Tom, you talk about how much better they are at home, and the record certainly bears that out. Do you think that there's anything that they can do defensively? You know, we talk, those of us in Ohio who cover the Cavaliers or talk about the Cavaliers for a living talk about how bad their defense is. But what we don't talk about is how incredibly powerful their offense is. They're a team that's built with scorers. The big three last night in this win had 89 points, with 37 for Kyrie, 27 for Love, and 25 for LeBron James. That doesn't even count the shooting of J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver and other guys. So let's talk about the defense from the Pacers' standpoint. Is there any reason to believe that at home they'll be any more proficient at stopping, the offensive onslaught of the Cavaliers than they were out at the Q in Cleveland?
Well, I'd like to say yes, but really, you know, you get home, the offense is better. But their defense and, you know, the roster in general is not a good mix, and that's been a problem all year. Really not a good matchup with the Cavs because – they have no depth at center, and Al Jefferson got hurt. He's been out, but he's a monstrous liability defensively and really can't even be played anymore. And then you're stuck with Kevin Serafin and with Love and Thompson being so active, we kind of refer to those guys as, the double plotter lineup when they're in there together, and, they just clog everything up and hurt them offensively. So you're not gaining anything, even when they're a little better defensively up front. But really against the Cavs, you know, stopping that pick and roll and the mismatches they can create, spotting up all those 3-point shooters, it just seems like there's 5 of them out there around the arc, with, you know, LeBron handling the ball. It is just a tough matchup for this team defensively. And I don't know what answers they're going to have, you know, honestly. They really haven't tried to do a lot different in these two games. There haven't been a lot of adjustments. That's going to come down to coaching. But I really don't have much hope because all year it's been a struggle at the defensive end.
Last thing, and we'll let you run. I want to go back to the Paul George comments about Lance Stephenson. He said,
he's got to learn to control himself. He's got to learn to just be in the moment. You know, Lance is in our locker room, is looked upon as a leader.
That's the line. That's the line that had me going, wait, what? Did he really say that? Lance Stephenson, who's been one of the most mercurial guys, a little bit of a kind of an outlandish personality guy, and I'm just trying to be as generous as I can in describing his persona. Is he really viewed as a leader in that Pacers locker room? Or is Paul George kind of just kind of speaking off the cuff there and really didn't mean that?
Oh, and by the way, he's only been here for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that? How's this guy, based on his history, how is he a leader? And based on his proximity to the roster and how long he's been there, how is he a leader?
Exactly. And again, this is kind of Paul talking without kind of realizing what he's saying. So let me try and interpret what I think he's saying. And I think what he is saying is, instantly the team kind of gravitated towards, Lance's energy, because really this was a real flatline group. You know, Jeff Teague and Thad Young, even PG, all these guys, none of them have a lot of, you know, fire and motion on the court. And Lance came in, and that's all he is. And everybody, like, took it positively. You know, it could have gone the other way, where everybody's like, screw you, you know. But I think that part where he kind of gave him an edge and that energy, that is the leadership, quote-unquote, that Paul is talking about that they need, but they don't need it to be in a destructive manner. So that's the best interpretation I can give you for that comment.
Okay.
Because, you know, it is odd that, you know, a guy coming in 2 weeks is all of a sudden your team leader. And it also kind of speaks to the fact that Paul George is the team leader, supposed to be the team leader, but he isn't. That's not his strong suit by any stretch of the imagination.
Tom Lewis, who writes about the Pacers for IndyCornrows.com, a part of SBNation.com. Tom, thanks for the breakdown from Indianapolis. We appreciate it, and best of luck in games in the games at Indy. Hopefully you can, well, for you guys, hopefully you can extend the series a little bit. I wouldn't mind seeing it end in Game 4, but thanks so much for your time.
Hey, no problem. Great talking with you guys.
You got it. All right, there you go. Take care. Yeah, that's a strange thing there. That's a, you know, a strange comment to make. The guy's been with them, how many games? Four?
Six.
Five?
He
how
played
many,
six games.
Six games. And prior to, now, I mean, if you acquire Chris Paul and he only plays six games for you, you might be able to say, Chris is a leader on our team.
And get away with it.
Because
be
his history has been as a leader. If you acquire... I don't know, you might even say Paul George. If the Lakers were to acquire Paul George toward the end of the season and he plays six games, they might say, hey, man, look, Paul's a leader. And it's not because he's been here long enough to lead, but because he's been a leader in this, you know, in this league. How is Lance Stephenson leading the Pacers in any way, shape, or form? Either based on the number of games he played, which was pointed out, or the fact that his career has been just one kind of strange, weird little wild thrill ride for Lance Stephenson.
He's got to learn to control himself. He's got to learn to just be in the moment. You know, Lance is in our locker room, is looked upon as a leader, one of our leaders. So his body language has to improve just for the team. You know, we all know it.
How do you have to correct a guy's body language 4 seconds after calling him a leader?
Yeah, that's
you got bad body language here.
He's kind of
not really leading the guys when he's slumped over and he's angry and acting like it's over. Yeah, that's our leader, though? What?
Yeah, that is kind of contradictory. The only thing I'll say in terms of a positive for the Pacers and Lance Stephenson is, you know, for what it's worth, he is back in the one place where things were kind of going okay for him. You know, if you recall, the first year LeBron came back, so this would be two seasons ago, 14-15, he signed that big deal with the Charlotte Hornets. That blew up in everybody's faces. He played 43 games for the Clippers and then 26 for the Grizzlies last year. And then this year, he only appeared in 18 NBA games, 6 for the Pelicans, 6 for the Timberwolves, and then 6 more for the Pacers. So about the only positive for Lance Stephenson is, well, I'm back in the place where things at least went right for me.
I guess. That's one way to look at it. But that's one way to look at it.
But if you're the Cavs, you got to keep attacking that, I think. Just like they did in the third quarter with Kevin Love.
Oh, yeah.
The third foul when he slammed the ball on the ground. Yeah, he's an emotional guy. We get that. But you saw at that point, at least I did through my TV screen, the utter frustration. You, if... as Tyronn Lue and LeBron James said leading up to these playoffs, oh, we'll have more time for practices and film and, you know, being able to make adjustments. Well, there's one of your adjustments right there. Just keep offensively going right at Stephenson until he emotionally breaks.
That's just leadership, right? That's just leadership slamming the ball down like that. That's all that is. All right, hey, real quick, let's get you another opportunity now for your Orlando flyaway. Do you realize there's only two more opportunities to qualify for this grand prize drawing, which is going to take place at the end of the week? Toledo's ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, that's us, has a chance for you and a guest to spend 4 days and three nights in beautiful Orlando, Florida. To qualify, listen weekdays to this program, well, today and tomorrow. Now is the only chance you have left for the cue to call. And also, you can register online once a day at 1065theticket.com. This is all brought to you by the beautiful Orlando Center Marriott, offer a world of possibilities, Allegiant Air, Toledo Express Airport, Shea's Carpet, Premier Vapor, Country Hearth, and ESPN 1065 The Ticket. Caller number 5 right now, you are going to be in the grand prize drawing to go to Orlando, Florida at the end of this week. That's when we'll have the drawing. Caller 5-866-240-1065. Get yourself on the line right now, and good luck to you. Back with hour number 2 right after this.
Right back to LeBron, takes his time, scores. LeBron gets the angle, sends it, and hits it. LeBron turns the corner, shaking the leg. LeBron changed gears. Kevin Love wide open three. The bottom. Curry spin around and he hit it. Uncle Drew goes to work. Curry called for it against Teague. Gets to the glass, it goes in left hand. And inside, two more for Kyrie. Shumpert for the corner. Ah, Shumpert. Kyrie Irving. Against T. Creates space and hit a tough three. LeBron James steps into the three. Kevin Love! Kyrie lost it! Oh! Rudy Irving gets the eye. LeBron James stays in front. George equals the pass. CJ Miles a step back, tough shot. Turner hits his second shot here tonight. Stephenson off the bounce, and he hit it. Teague backs out for three and hits it. LeBron now defending Drew. Crossover move, got inside, gave it up to a dunking Turner. Paul George against LeBron James. George turned the corner, bump, fires it up and hits an impossible shot. George for three. Kyrie feeling it, sends it. Take a 2-0 lead.
We're right there of what we know we can become. And we'll figure it out. Like I told you, I'd much rather have an 18-point lead than not have a lead at all. We make plays down the stretch to win a ball game, and in the postseason, that's all you can ask for. But we're right there on turning the switch on what we really can become. Our mindset is what we can do to help each other to be successful out on the floor. We have a game plan from our coaching staff, and we just try to execute that. We can't worry about what the opponent is feeling or if they feel like they lost composure. It's not our mindset. Our mindset is what can we do this defensive possession to get a stop, offensively what we can do to execute to get a bucket.
I think just breaking down the film after Sunday's game, just knowing that between Tristan and myself, Channing, Bron, whoever was low on some of those pin downs and rotations, we just had to be there early. And just want to help my teammates out, sacrifice my body. I felt like I did that tonight.
Man, we had the answers. We'd probably be up in the series right now. I'm trying to figure it out. We're trying to figure it out. They're killing us on it. Whatever it is, whatever we got to do, we got to try to figure it out at home. But they're definitely killing us on a 1-3 pick and roll. It's you guys writing us off that this game was going to be easy for the Cavs. Now, we take away some of these easy baskets we're giving up. These games might be a little different.
Salazar in his third start this year. Now the 3-2. Struck him out with a changeup. 95 at the knees. Runner goes, swing and a miss. He struck him out. Danny Salazar finishes with 3 strikeouts here in the 6th inning, giving him 7 on the night.
The number it has grown to. There's a big 2-out knock.
Edwin Encarnacion comes through with his first hit as an Indian with runners in scoring position, and it gives the Indians a 2-1 lead in the 3rd. Oh, that is smoked. Deep right center field, and it is gone from Michael Brantley. His second home run of the year, making a 3-1 Cleveland lead. He's driven in 2 of the 3 runs tonight for the Tribe. Hit in the air, center field, Lonnie Chisenhall makes the catch, and the Indians survive. The Twins leave them loaded, and Cleveland takes the series opener.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, hour number 2 is underway. It's 11 minutes past 4 o'clock. We got 49 minutes more of outstanding awesome for you. Mr. Miller will be around with your drive time coming up at 5 o'clock. I want to stay in the NBA, but I want to get away from the Cavaliers-Pacers game. Talk about something else that happened last night. Did you hear Coach David Fizdale? Of course you did. Who is David Fizdale? I wonder before this game and before this series, how many people knew who the Memphis coach was? I mean, because, you know, he kind of went under the radar, if you will. He used to be an assistant with Eric Spoelstra back when LeBron was there with the Miami Heat. So, you know, he's a rookie coach, and he made a point of that because there has been a new phrase. We will not get rooked. A new phrase coined. We will not get rooked. And he's talking, of course, about his status as a rookie head coach. Coach David Fizdale of the Memphis Grizzlies let loose. In fact, I would not be surprised if the NBA's league offices haven't already drawn up some sort of a deal where they get all, or at least a portion of all of David Fizdale's future earnings. This fine is going to be something big. It's going to be more than just a normal, we're going to fine a referee for fine a coach for criticizing the referees. This is going to be big. What do they call when you take garnishment? Garnishment is what I'm looking for. They're going to garnish some of his wages in perpetuity because he got his money's worth. When he decided he was going to go ahead and criticize the officiating, he got his money's worth. It was like Earl Weaver. For old school baseball fans, you know what I'm talking about. The former Orioles manager, Earl Weaver, among the best, along with Lou Piniella, they may be a little more recent. If you're going to get tossed out of the ballgame for arguing calls, make it worth your time and your money. If you're going to get tossed, get your money's worth and really let them have it. And that's pretty much what happened. Remember when it was toward the end of the regular season? I don't remember which loss it was. Maybe the one to the Hawks where they gave up the big comeback. But the Cavaliers, Kyrie Irving, was after the game really upset about the officiating, and he was asked about it, and he started to talk. Frank, do you remember this? And he said, how much is the fine again? And somebody said probably about 25, and he goes, that ain't worth it. So he didn't say anything. And maybe there is a standard like $25,000 fine for criticizing the officials after a game. But Kyrie essentially said, man, it ain't even worth it. So you want to lose his money, which I find hilarious, by the way, because 25 grand to a guy making what Kyrie makes is like me losing $5. So, you know, it's just a difference of perspective. But at any rate, when David Fizdale decided to go off after the game last night, and he did indeed go off, he probably knew the big fine was coming, and he did not care. He even referenced getting on the plane, having a glass of wine, and cooling off a little bit. He couldn't wait to go do those things. I'll cool off. I'll have a glass of wine. And I'll watch the tape, to figure out. And he was asked about lineups or something to that effect. So Coach Fizdale, after saying that he had to cool down a little bit and figure out how to handle things, he went ahead and handled things his way. So here's Coach David Fizdale of the Memphis Grizzlies laying it all on the line for the press.
You know, it's unfortunate that I got a guy like Mike Conley who in his whole career has got zero technical fouls and just cannot seem to get the proper respect from the officials that he deserves. It was a very poorly officiated basketball game. Zach Randolph, the most rugged guy in the game, had zero free throws, but somehow Kawhi Leonard had 19 free throws. First half, we shot 19 shots in the paint, and we had 6 free throws. They shot 11 times in the paint, and they had 23 free throws. I'm not a numbers guy, but that doesn't seem to add up. Overall, 35 times we shot the ball in the paint. We had 15 free throws for the game. They shot 18 times in the paint and had 32 free throws. Kawhi shot more free throws than our whole team. Explain it to me. We don't get the respect that these guys deserve because Mike Conley doesn't go crazy. He has class, and he just plays the game. But I'm not going to let them treat us that way. You know, I know Pop's got pedigree, and I'm a young rookie, but they're not going to rook us. That's unacceptable. That was unprofessional. My guys dug in that game and earned the right to be in that game, and they did not even give us a chance.
All right, thank you.
Take that for data.
I got to tell you, I don't know a ton about David Fizdale. I know what I told you, that he used to be an assistant with Miami. But I love this guy. I love him. I don't know a ton about him, but I love him. You could hear the heavy breathing. You know, I heard a couple of other analysts today saying that, oh, this is all garbage. Oh, this is all just, you know, sour grapes. David Fizdale is going off, just to kind of make an excuse for the loss, or worse, to try to work the officials for game three. This isn't all about game two. This is about working the officials to get a break or two in a call at home in game three or game four. And I got to tell you, I watched the entirety of his press conference from the time he sat down to the time he got up and said, take that for data. And I don't exactly know what that means, by the way, other than factor this into all of your, you know, your data, your analytics when you talk about your shots and your inside versus outside and who draws fouls and whatnot. I really don't understand the take that for data line. But then he just kind of stormed out of there. I mean, he smacked the table. You could hear it. Just let's listen to his heavy breathing. Listen to his you know, trying to get into a control of his temper, I should say, before the media relations guy says, okay, that's enough. And then he gets up out of his chair and slams it and says that. Listen. You can hear how ticked he is.
All right, thank you.
Take that for data.
Boom. Take that for data. Boom. That's David Fizdale. Now, I watched the entirety, and it was only about 2:50, I think, maybe 2 minutes, 50 seconds, the entirety of this. But even before all of that, in between questions about lineups and, you know, what rotations he was using and so on and so forth, you could tell he was struggling to keep his calm about him. He was breathing heavily. He was doing the into the microphone, not intentionally, obviously, but he's just trying to stay calm. He was so livid with the officiating. And that was even before he got to saying the officiating sucked. The question is he really just trying to work the officials, or does he have a complaint? And in my estimation, he has an absolute complaint. He's 100% right. The Spurs, by the nature of being the Spurs, they're going to get breaks. Greg Popovich, by the nature of being Greg Popovich, is going to get calls for his team. And that's what he meant, of course, when he said, I know Pop's got a pedigree and I'm just a rookie. Let me hear that part again.
We don't get the respect that these guys deserve because Mike Conley doesn't go crazy. He has class and he just plays the game. But I'm not going to let them treat us that way. You know, I know Pop's got pedigree and I'm a young rookie, but they're not going to rook us. That's unacceptable. That was unprofessional.
I think he's right. Pop is going to get calls because of his pedigree. Kawhi Leonard is going to get calls because of his status. He's going to get calls today that he didn't get 3 years ago. Make no mistake about it, he has risen. He has paid his dues and climbed his way to the top of the NBA's pecking order. Not the very top of it, but, you know, at the top. He was an 8-point-a-game scorer as a rookie. He wouldn't have gotten these kind of calls then. He was about a 12-point-a-game scorer in his second year. We all know the progression. We all know that now he's a 25, 26-point-a-game scorer, a great rebounder, a tremendous defender, and one of the stars in the league. He'll probably finish in the top four in MVP, in the MVP balloting. He's going to get calls because of his reputation as well as one of the game stars. The Grizzlies don't have that. He said, my one star that I do have, Mike Conley, doesn't scream and try to work the refs. He doesn't complain and make those faces that a guy like, he didn't say this, of course, I'm just using the example, a guy like LeBron James makes every time there's a bad call against him or there is a no call where he felt like he should be at the foul line, where he's just looking like he had just gotten robbed, you know, but his house has gotten robbed, not just robbed on a call. Mike Conley doesn't do that, so he doesn't work the official. So in David Fizdale's opinion, he doesn't get the calls because of that. All right, well, let's break this down a little bit more. I'm going to play this short 1 minute and 20 second outburst of David Fizdale again while breaking down a little bit about what he had to say.
You know, it's unfortunate that I got a guy like Mike Conley who in his whole career has got zero technical fouls and just cannot seem to get the proper respect from the officials that he deserves.
I'm going to pause there because I like to be fair. You know this about me by now if you've been listening to the show. Anytime I break down audio, break down game plans, break down plays, how these things run, even if I have a favorite in the game, I'm going to be fair to the other side just because it's the only way to really have any credibility as far as I'm concerned. And while I am favoring David Fizdale in this argument, I'm going to also say the truth. While Mike Conley's never gotten a technical foul, and he's right, and therefore because he does not throw a fit every time there's a bad call against him or a no call that should have been called against his opponent, That isn't evidence that he necessarily got screwed in this game. Because Kawhi Leonard, whom David Fizdale will talk about in a second again, I think he's only had one or two technical fouls his entire career. He isn't a guy that whines and pleads and begs and moans for calls from the official either. So I don't know that David Fizdale really has a ton of ground there to work with. but he does have more coming up.
It was a very poorly officiated basketball game. Zach Randolph, the most rugged guy in the game, had zero free throws, but somehow Kawhi Leonard had 19 free throws. First half, we shot 19 shots in the paint, and we had 6 free throws. They shot 11 times in the paint, and they had 23 free throws.
Now we're getting into the meat of this. Now we're getting into some reality, some real talk here. We know that star players get calls. We also know that star players who live outside the arc aren't going to get so many calls. Why? Because most calls come from when you are inside, when you're driving the lane. Or if you're a big guy, when you're posting up. If you play the game from beyond the arc, 3 points at a time, you're not going to see the foul line a ton. So the Golden State Warriors have a ton of stars. 4 All-Stars last time I checked in the All-Star game this year, 4 of them. Yet they are one of the least free throw shooting teams in the league. And that's the reason, because they don't attack. They don't penetrate. They just pretty much shoot the ball from the outside, so they're not going to get a lot of shots. I point all of that out, obviously, just to buttress the point being made by Fizdale here about the NBA officiating. When a team is as physical and as much of an inside presence as Memphis is, it would stand to reason if there's contact, they're going to be getting to the foul line a little bit more often. And as he points out, they're not. But San Antonio is.
First half, we shot 19 shots in the paint, and we had 6 free throws.
So let's break that down. 19 shots in the paint, 6 free throws is all they got compared to the Spurs.
They shot 11 times in the paint, and they had 23 free throws.
Wow. 8 more shots in the paint for Memphis, 17 fewer free throws. Either San Antonio is spectacular at playing good interior defense without fouling somebody, or the officials are just off the hook here. Or the officials are just not that interested in calling everything down the middle, that San Antonio is a marquee, you know, franchise and Memphis is not.
23 free throws. I'm not a numbers guy, but that doesn't seem to add up. Overall,
I'm not a numbers guy either. I'm not an analytics guy, Coach Fizdale, but you're right. It does not add up. Let's continue.
Overall, 35 times we shot the ball in the paint. We had 15 free throws for the game.
Let's look at that. 35 shots in the paint. 15 free throws. 35, 15. Tell us the rest, coach.
35 times we shot the ball in the paint. We had 15 free throws for the game. They shot 18 times in the paint and had 32 free throws.
Wow. So let's do that math again. I'm not going to do a percentage thing on it, but 35 shots in the paint, 15 free throws. They took, what was it, 18 shots in the paint and took 33. Was it 33?
35 times we shot the ball in the paint. We had 15 free throws for the game. They shot 18 times in the paint and had 32 free throws. Kawhi shot more free throws than our whole team.
32, and Kawhi had 19 of them. Now, I'm not going to complain and say that Kawhi Leonard isn't a great player who knows how to attack and draw fouls. I have seen great players go to the line 19 times in a game. It'll happen. Not often, but it'll happen if they're really an aggressive, you know, type of player. But to the foul disparity that he's talking about here and the number of play, in other words, Memphis did not play an outside the arc San Antonio type of game. They played an inside game, 35 shots in the paint. San Antonio played the outside game. They only had 18 shots in the paint. Yet for the 35 shots inside for the Grizzlies, they got 15 free throws. For the 18 shots in the paint, the Spurs got 32 free throws. It sounds pretty doggone clear to me that David Fizdale has every right to complain. And I know he's going to get fined anyway. I know he's going to get hit, and the NBA league office is going to say this is inappropriate, blah, blah, blah. We can't do this to the officials. But you know what? When you're right, you're right. And sometimes it's worth the expense. And you know what I hope? How many times have we seen Mark Cuban get fined because he doesn't care? He'll get fined $250,000 at a time because he's a multi-billionaire. He didn't care. And sometimes he'll cover the fines for his players if he feels like they're in the right. Sometimes he'll cover the fine for his coaches. I hope Memphis ownership will look at Coach Fizdale, who is a rookie head coach, as he pointed out, and who's making a rookie head coach's salary. This guy isn't, you know, making Doc Rivers money. He's not making, you know, Phil Jackson money. I don't know, he's now a club president, but you understand the point. He's not making Greg Popovich money. He's not making, you know, Brad Stevens money. He's probably not making Stan Van Gundy money. I hope that the owner covers him and covers his fine for him because it's real. When you're right, you're right.
You know, I know Pop's got pedigree and I'm a young rookie, but they're not going to rook us. That's unacceptable. That was unprofessional. My guys dug in that game and earned the right to be in that game, and they did not even give us a chance.
All right. Thank you.
Take that for data.
I'll tell you what. I like him. I like him a lot. And I don't know what kind of a strategist he is. I don't know what kind of a game planner he is. I don't know any of that stuff. I don't know his philosophy is on offenses and defenses and X's and O's. But I will tell you this. I don't care if my team is the Cavaliers or my team is the Pistons or my team is the Pacers or my team is anybody else. I get a coaching opening. I want my GM calling David Fizdale. I love what I heard just in that little bit. Troy is in Bowling Green, wants to comment on Coach Fizdale and the star treatment that the Spurs apparently got last night in Game 2 of that Western Conference first rounder. Hey, Troy, go ahead.
Hey, Captain. You know, isn't it, I'm sitting here driving and listening to you, and is it an NBA problem, or it just doesn't seem to be as prevalent in the NFL or Major League Baseball, because I don't see a pitcher getting more strikes because they're, you know, a veteran versus a rookie.
Yeah, they do. I don't think it's as obvious because balls and strikes, as you well know, Troy, are much more subjective than probably anything else other than maybe a holding call in a, you know, in an NFL game. Every umpire has his own strike zone. You know that. And one of the things they do, it's high, you know, I give the high strike or I give the low strike or I give off the black or I don't give off the black or whatever it might be. But yes, ask pitchers. Pitchers who have been around a long time, who have established themselves as being, I don't know if I have to say star caliber, but just respected veteran status, are going to get calls from umpires that are borderline a lot more than pitchers who are newbies. And the same thing is true when you're a hitter. Established stars who have kind of earned a reputation of having a really good command of the strike zone and they lay off the bad pitches, you know, when it's a Derek Jeter standing in the box and there's a borderline pitch, there is oftentimes the umpire will, depending on who the pitcher is, of course, you know, if you got two established stars, it is what it is. But an umpire will say, well, if Jeter thought that was a ball, it was a ball. And he does not hold up that right hand and ring him up. I think that happens a lot more in baseball than you realize.
And I don't really disagree with that. I guess it just seems like it's like a given that because I'm LeBron James or other some of the superstars, I get this call. And I guess a foul is a foul or, you know, travel or whatever, it should be the same across the board. And that's just a...
Well, it's more egregious in basketball because it usually leads to a point. You know what I mean? Right then and there. You're 100% right. I mean, let's look at it this way. Basketball, much more so than baseball or football, is built around the individual players. They build their and brand themselves around their stars. It's not about the teams. It's about the stars, okay? LeBron James is a star. Michael Jordan was a star. Magic Johnson. Those guys are going to get that extra step. If they want an extra step, they're going to get it. Those guys are going to get the phantom call if they get brushed up against a lot more than guys who are just ham and eggers in the NBA working their way through. And the reason why is because the league wants to see them do great things because those great things sell tickets. And I guarantee you that the officials talk about this in their league meetings and in the officials' meetings about the kinds of things that they have to do. They don't want it to be egregious, but they want to make sure that the stars have room to be stars and don't let them get too overly hounded by defenders or by the rules of gravity when it comes to traveling. And the reason it stands out so much more for us, Troy, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, is because when a star gets away with a travel and scores, you know, people are excited about the score. They're not so much worried about whether or not it was a bad call. Same thing in fouls. It leads to two free throws. People are going to say, well, maybe the... maybe there was a star thing going on there, but they don't care because they got two free throws out of it. And it's just much more, I don't know what the word is, but it's just much more obvious. Whereas, you know, a ball strike call from a, you know, in the example I was given before might not manifest itself in a home run or a run or an RBI. It just is a little bit more overlooked.
Yeah, I'm not a conspiracy type guy, but in other words, what you're saying is it sticks.
Yeah, it is. I mean, to the extent that star players get breaks that other players don't, it is fixed. Now, I would be real cautious about saying that word as if it means we're going to fix it so that this guy's team advances, you know, because the stars need to be in the finals. And that's, I won't go that far. I'm not saying the referees are trying to change games. I just think it's, you know, if you've got Kevin Durant on one side and Russell Westbrook on the other side, both of those guys are going to get calls. I don't think the refs are trying to influence the outcome of the game. I just think they're going to see this guy's ridiculous athleticism enables him to do things that other guys can't do. So if I don't see that it was a violation, it's no big deal. But somebody else who is, like I said, a Hammond Egg or a middle-of-the-rotation guy, a seventh guy on a team that's a second guy off the bench might not get that call. I don't think it's fixed in the way that, you know, you're saying it, like pro wrestling is scripted. But, yeah, stars are definitely going to get more breaks.
Yeah. Well, it's just unfair, I guess.
It is.
And it's just unsportsmanlike to the fact that, you know, we teach kids to compete and shut their mouth and play. And all we're supposed to be sportsmanship until we get to the NBA. Don't you know who I am? Attitude comes out. And that's really unfortunate.
And you know, the real weird part about it, Troy, is when you don't have one of those stars on your team, it's a lot more annoying and aggravating to you. I mean, I remember growing up, you know, as a Cavaliers fan and rooting for Price and Doherty and the boys against Jordan, and Jordan getting away with everything, and it drove me nuts. Michael Jordan gets every call. You brush up against him, he's at the foul line. He's allowed to push off, and it's no foul, and he gets that extra step on his drives, and it's just so aggravating. You can't stand that star power treatment. But then the tables turn a little bit when you are the beneficiary, because now my Cavaliers have a LeBron James or a Kyrie Irving or another star-type player. They're going to get those breaks, and you're like, oh, just quit whining, and that's the way that it is. And right now, for example, the Pistons fans are probably, they don't have that kind of a star caliber player. They're not going to get the calls. Reggie Jackson, Tobias Harris, I mean, nobody there is going to get the kind of calls that a LeBron James or a Paul George or somebody else is going to get. So it's probably a lot more annoying for fans, like I said, in Detroit or places where you don't have the superstar than it is for the cities that have one.
Well, maybe someday we'll clean it up.
Yeah, maybe, but don't hold your breath.
Because I'm not.
They make their money off of this. You know that. They make their money off of the stars being stars and doing spectacular things, and they're not going to try to get in the way of these guys doing their spectacular things. Hey, Troy, thanks for the call. Much appreciated. 866-240-1065. I want to tell you about Brandywine, but let me talk to Terry in Sylvania first. Terry, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How are you, sir?
Hey, Bob, nice talking to you.
Good to have you. What's on your mind?
The last caller had a lot of good points. The one about a pitcher with the wide strike zone, Greg Maddux.
Bingo. Yes,
he did. You know, he had that outside corner a couple inches over more than many pitchers in the major leagues. And the umpires called it accordingly because of his control.
Exactly, because of A, his star power. You know, he was a star. He's a 3-4-time Cy Young Award winner, whatever it was. And on the way, you know, to developing that reputation, you know, he had the control. He was pretty much, it's kind of like what I said about Jeter. He had such a great eye at the plate, a guy who doesn't strike out very much. Tony Gwynn, let's go back a little further. A guy like Tony Gwynn, such a brilliant batter, such a great eye, could put the bat on the ball pretty much anywhere, and he's only going to swing at strikes. And it was well established, and umpires knew. Tony Gwynn doesn't swing at balls. So if Tony Gwynn takes one, you know, and it's borderline, Tony Gwynn's getting that call. And the same thing worked when Maddux is on the mound. Maddux has perfect control, pinpoint accuracy, pinpoint command. If he tries to hit the black and it's borderline, I'm calling it black because Maddux is just that damn good. And it's not fixing the game. It's just the judgment of umpires, and that's how they roll.
Okay, that's my point, Bob. Have a good day.
Thank you. It's a great point. It's a great point, Terry, and I'm so glad you made it. Tony Gwynn at the bat, you know, you just pick guys like that. Wade Boggs are great hitters. Rod Carew is of the world. They always get the benefit of the doubt if it's a borderline pitch. Now, the umpire, of course, is in no man's land when it's Greg Maddux pitching to Tony Gwynn. You know, Maddox knows he has a strike. Tony Gwynn knows that's a ball. The umpire's just got to make his mind up then and there. But overall, what Terry just said was spot on. When you're a pinpoint control guy like Greg Maddox, you know, an umpire is going to say, this cat knows where he wanted to put the ball. And if that's where he wanted it, especially if the catcher frames it well, he's ringing up the batter. It's just the way that it works. All right, hey, I told you before, and I want to tell you again about Brandywine. Are you ready to golf and play golf at the only all-inclusive private country club in Northwest Ohio? Then you got to get to the all-new Brandywine in Maumee. You know, people are always taking all-inclusive vacations because it saves them money. Well, at Brandywine, you're on a constant all-inclusive vacation. Unlimited golf, cart, pool, fitness, and the social events, including the amazing pool parties. It is just an amazing place to be. The new Brandywine Country Club. They're changing the rules on how traditional clubs compete. They're doing an amazing job. They're thinking outside the box. This one low all-inclusive price, rather than charging you piecemeal for everything that you want to do there, it's just a better way to do it. It's so refreshing if you're a golfer to play a private club where there's no surprises. You know, the new Brandywine Country Club features 18 holes of Arthur Hill's Design Championship Golf. It's a layout that is spectacular. It's a par 72 now. There are three par fives on the front nine. Total yardage is 6639. It's a challenge for great golfers, but it's fun and playable and open enough for the rest of us, too. That's because I'm not a great golfer, but I love it. And one of the best things about joining the all-inclusive private Brandywine Club, you never have to wait for leagues to get out of your way when you want to play, because there's only one league at Brandywine, yours. That's right, members only. And don't forget about the amazing restaurant. Champions Bar and Grill reopened in the summer last year. It's now open to the public. That's right, open to the public. You don't have to be a member to eat at the great restaurant. Call this phone number, 419-865-2393, for all the details. And if you join the new Brandywine, before May 31st, they will waive the initiation fee. How about that? It doesn't get much better. 419-865-2393. Join me on the course and join me at the club this year at the all-new, all-inclusive Brandywine Country Club. Back with our final segment. Hopefully more of your phone calls right after this on ESPN.
The Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, we do continue. 15 more minutes of outstanding awesome for you. Then Mr. Miller will bring you his version of outstandingness and awesomeness. Yeah, I just made those up. Coming up, drive time at 5 o'clock. If you want to get in before the top of the hour, there is an opportunity now at 866-240-1065. Do you find it a little bit off-putting that the NBA plays favorites in the way that they do? Again, I'm not going to suggest that they're trying to fix the outcomes of games. There's a lot of people who feel like, oh, this is fixed, that's it. No, I don't believe that. I don't believe it's fixed. I don't think they're trying to fix the outcomes of series either. But I do think that they treat star players a little bit differently, and it's probably upon orders from on high. You know, the league offices probably say, look, we make our money because Russell Westbrook can score 35 with 15 rebounds and 12 assists. We make our money because LeBron James can score 40 points with 20 rebounds and lead a team to a championship. We need to give these guys a little room to breathe. Give them a little latitude. If there's a little shuffle of a step before a spectacular move, and it's LeBron James making it, Kevin Durant making it, Carmelo Anthony even making it, swallow the whistle. But if it's just, you know, if it's David Lee making the same move, we got the integrity of the league to think about here. You know what I mean? It's just, it's obvious. It's been going on forever. Well, I won't go forever, but I'll say at least the last 30 years that I've been watching the NBA very closely, maybe 35. You know, again, it went on with Jordan. I'll tell you what, I'll tell you this, to kind of tie this to Detroit to make this a little bit more of a localized story for you. I remember back in the day when we used to hear about the Jordan rules, and, you know, the Jordan rules always referred to the Pistons' way of defending Michael Jordan, the way they were going to put a body on him and play him very differently than anybody else. We're going to beat him up and wear him out. The Jordan rules were a different way of defending Michael Jordan. But I remember being younger at the time and thinking, what do they mean by the Jordan rules? I thought they were talking about the league's Jordan rules, where Jordan gets to do things a little bit differently than everybody else does. You know, back in 88, 89 or whatever it was, when I heard about the Jordan rules, I just, you know, and that, of course, became a book and everything else. But I just kind of thought it meant to the Jordan rules. Jordan gets a third step on a drive. Jordan gets to push off on Bryon Russell. You know, and the game-winning shot in the finals against the Jazz. Jordan gets to do whatever it is that Jordan wants to do because he's the star of the league. And it really didn't even, it wasn't even a question mark for me. It wasn't controversial. It was accepted. It was expected. I didn't like it, like I said, because I didn't have Jordan. I will tell you this. Back in 2003, when LeBron James came out of the out of Akron St. Vincent St. Mary High School and went into the NBA draft, and the Cavaliers won that lottery, and the Cavaliers had the premier superstar in the league, not named Kobe Bryant at the time, I remember thinking, I don't know how to handle this. We have Jordan now. Now, don't get me, I'm not doing the whole Jordan versus LeBron career comparisons. I'm talking about it was still fresh enough in my mind in 2003 to remember the 90s and the late 80s when the quote-unquote Jordan rules, as I understood them, meant that LeBron or Michael Jordan got, you know, extra help from the officials. And now I said to myself, my God, my team for the first time ever has the guy who's going to get extra help from the officials. I just expected it, and I liked it. And I will tell you this, even at the age I am now, watching the games as we are now, LeBron James got away with a couple of travels yesterday. And because it's my team, and therefore my guy is scoring, I'm just kind of like, yep, that's the way the game is. Had I been rooting for the Pacers, I might have been screaming, oh my God, come on, refs, that's a travel. But stars do indeed get better treatment. And that's unfortunately something that David, that's, if you just turn on the radio, that's where what David Fizdale found out. David Fizdale found out yesterday and was lamenting the fact that star players and star franchises and star coaches get the benefit of the doubt from officials over everyday regular rooks, as he called himself. He said,
Zach Randolph, the most rugged guy in the game, had zero free throws, but somehow Kawhi Leonard had 19 free throws. First half, we shot 19 shots in the paint, and we had 6 free throws. They shot 11 times in the paint, and they had 23 free throws. I'm not a numbers guy, but that doesn't seem to add up. Overall, 35 times we shot the ball in the paint. We had 15 free throws for the game. They shot 18 times in the paint and had 32 free throws. Kawhi shot more free throws than our whole team. Explain it to me. We don't get the respect that these guys deserve because Mike Conley doesn't go crazy. He has class, and he just plays the game. But I'm not going to let them treat us that way. You know, I know Pop's got pedigree, and I'm a young rookie, but they're not going to rook us. That's unacceptable. That was unprofessional. My guys dug in that game and earned the right to be in that game, and they did not even give us a chance.
From a coaching standpoint, Pop is Michael Jordan. From an organizational standpoint, the Spurs are Michael Jordan. They're going to get the calls over a rook head coach like David Fizdale and a Memphis team that is obviously outmatched, under-talented, et cetera, et cetera. They're not going to get the breaks, and it is wrong. In my opinion, it is wrong. Like I said, all of my personal experiences, being mad that Jordan got the calls, but now being happy that my guy gets the calls, my team gets the calls, all of that put aside, the personal, you know, aspects here, as just an analyst, it's garbage. It really is. The game should be called evenly for everybody, and it's not. Steve is in Toledo. Steve, thanks for waiting. You're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go right ahead.
Well, I think the problem is, and is it's getting worse. As teams are not allowed to play defense because, hey, you touch a guy, it's a foul. It's just made it so much more obvious than, you know, even back in the day, you made mention when Jordan pushed off Russell. I remember being and I was 10 or 11 when it happened, just screaming at the TV. But with, as you see that this game's all based on offense, it's, you know, those things are just going to keep going and going because I believe we as fans want to see points score. We're always wanting to see what the stat line is at the end of the game. That I think this is why the NBA just lets it go.
Well, you're right. It is an offensive game now. In a weird way, it's kind of like the NFL. The NFL continues to expand the rules, making receivers have more advantages, quarterbacks have more advantages, so much harder to guard them and touch them, et cetera, because they want high-scoring games. The NBA does not want to go back to the late 80s, to the 90s, to the times when it was, well, not really late 80s. I guess it was more in the 90s than in the late 90s, when the big physical, rough New York Knicks or the rough bad boy Pistons were making games 82-78. The league doesn't want 82-78 anymore. And I'm not saying they want to have 135-130, but they do want what they're getting. They want 108-107. They want 110-105. They want more offense. There's no doubt about it. They are loving this renaissance, especially with the proliferation of three-point shooting.
You're absolutely right. And this is why you don't see the defensive stars in the game. Back when I was a kid, when I was a kid, you could look at guys like Mutombo, who was this, even though he did very limited offense, was a star because of his block shocking, his altering shots, getting rebounds and defense. You even saw a little bit with Ben Wallace before, he went to Chicago.
Sure.
But as this game's gotten more offensive driven, who's that guy now? Who do you look who basically is an all-star because of his defense?
Well, you know, that's a great question. There really aren't very many of those guys anymore. The big shot-blocking guys are also, offensive players. Big centers like DeMarcus Cousins, with Anthony Davis now in New Orleans. They're offensive players first, and if they can block shots as well, good for them. But, no, there's not a place for too many guys like that. The Cavaliers tried to bring Bogut, if you recall, just a couple of months ago, to add him to this whole thing for the playoff run, to be a shot-blocking center who isn't going to give you much offensively. But the fact that he hurt himself and then they couldn't find anybody else lets you know how rare that quality is anymore.
Oh, yeah. It's becoming extinct. It's almost like the fullback in football.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great example you just gave. Hey, I got to run, Steve. Thanks for the call, my friend. I appreciate it. I want to get Brian up and on the radio before we're done. Brian in Toledo, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go right ahead.
Hey, Bob. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure, Brian.
I just wanted to elaborate, and I agree with everything that you're saying, but it's almost gotten to a point now where it's just accepted, and it's all sports across the board, hockey, basketball, baseball. The only cool thing about it is, when you talked about a hitter like Tony Gwynn that's facing a Tom Glavine or a Greg Maddux or a John Smoltz or Andy Pettit, guys like that, those were the really good matchups to watch because, like you said, Tony Gwynn takes a borderline pitch. You better call it a ball. But now you got Greg Maddux throwing it to him. So where are you going with that?
Yeah, those are the only times I think you can really say that the umpires are being kept honest. They have to actually call what they see, not assuming that the star saw it right and just kind of siding with them. Tony didn't swing, I'm siding with Tony. Or Greg put it where he wanted, and I'm siding with Greg. If they're facing each other, you're right. Those were must-see at-bats because you know what? You're going to get a true look at it, and the umpires are really going to have to call what they see because they're not going to take one side over the other.
Yeah, I agree. So, I just wanted to make that quick point, but I know you guys got to run, so thanks for taking the call.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate the call, Brian. You made a great point. Hey, on our way out the door, I want to remind you to get to our website and upload your ugly driveway. Toledo's ESPN 106.5 The Ticket and Buck Brothers, giving you a chance to win a new driveway for your home with the ugliest driveway contest. Details are online at 106.5theticket.com. Just upload a picture of your ugly driveway there. On our website, and you will be in the running for the brand-new driveway from Buck Brothers and your friends here at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. That's all the time we've got today. As I mentioned, Mike Miller is standing by. He's got your drive time coming up next. Stay where you are, right here on ESPN 106.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.